Welcome to the Lean Health Tech Podcast, where industry professionals discuss trends and topics where efficiency, healthcare, and technology meet. My name is Taryn Shipley, and I'm your host. Our guest speaker today is Dr. Natalie Davis, the Chief Medical Officer at Prevent Scripts, which focuses on chronic disease prevention. Thanks for joining us, Natalie.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Today's topic is getting ahead of the curve, chronic disease prevention. People are talking a lot about value-based care, which entails a greater focus on preventive medicine, especially when it comes to chronic diseases. So what gap does Prevent Scripts fill in the healthcare space?
So glad you asked me that. At Prevent Scripts, we help primary care providers identify and intervene with their patients that are at risk for metabolic conditions. And as you know, there's so many solutions out there for consumers to pay for to help them implement healthy lifestyles. You know, Weight Watchers, these go on and on. And there's many solutions for payers and employers to implement healthy lifestyles within their member and employed populations. Our focus is the primary care space, and we provide reimbursable screening and intervention tools, which automate much of the data collection to assess risk for metabolic conditions and also automate the collection of the key biometrics from patients, which providers can then use to optimize patient health. We take an evidence-based approach. So we use American Heart Association, American Medical Association, American Academy of Family Medicine, American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations as it relates to metabolic conditions. And we utilize those to take an evidence-based approach. And our programs are working, and we're seeing clinically significant reductions in blood pressure, weight, blood sugars, and the other key biometrics that dictate 80% of our health.
There's a very fine line between providing care that's low value or unnecessary versus providing preventive care.
We know that in the United States, we have the highest cost healthcare for the lowest value and lowest life expectancy. Also, we spend something like 95% of our money in the United States of America on specialists and hospital care. And if you look at the hospital care and the specialist care, these are people that have developed chronic conditions, and they are having all of the downstream effects of those chronic conditions. So they're in the ICU and they had a stroke, or they are diabetic and they have to go in and have surgery to have the proper foot cut off. Oftentimes when you look at hospital quality, these are things like hospital acquired infections. Was the proper foot cut off, in fact, in surgery for that diabetic patient? So that's 95% of where we're putting our money. We're putting our money in the wrong place. You know, in countries that have high value and low cost systems, they have a considerably much higher primary care expenditure. Our primary care expenditure, depending on who you read, is something like 4.9%. If we want to provide higher value, is we have to expand our primary care spending and contract our ICU for strokes, heart attack spending. And that is the only way we're going to do that is with the primary prevention of disease in the at-risk populations. And so our platform serves to help primary care doctors very easily provide this expansion of both primary care risk assessments in their population in a sort of an automated, semi-automated fashion, and provide reimbursable interventions that work over time to improve quality. And when I say quality, I'm not talking about hospital quality. I'm talking about blood pressures coming down, weights dropping, blood sugars coming down, patients' goal setting on their own. We're trying to improve that provider-patient relationship and sort of knit that patient to their primary care doctor's office, such that the patients are goal setting at home. They're improving. They're doing their monthly check-in with their provider coach to set goals and level set each month. And all of these things shift. They're basically increasing primary care spending by increasing reimbursable, efforts, primary care preventive counseling, the 5A preventive counseling approach. And as these patients are improving over time, as they get older and they're coming into the Medicare system, they're healthier.
You said a couple things that I absolutely loved. I love that you are partnering with the existing primary care provider, because there's a worry that all of these extra preventive services are very disconnected from the patient's PCP and it's fragmenting the care. So you have some patient data over here with this provider, some biometric data over here with this system or this company. So keeping that very cohesive, I think, is a phenomenal approach.
Right. A big part of our mission is to improve the physician-patient relationship. And, you know, patients have lots of opportunities nowadays. You know, as you know, that there's an onslaught of new telemedicine companies and the GLP-1 drugs. And, you know, all of these things serve to, if the primary care doctors aren't paying attention, these things serve to further fragment that primary care patient relationship. So we're really offering this consumerized version of tracking that's evidence-based in a way that allows the provider to get that data every month. And so then there's also an accountability piece. So the patient is signing up to do this remote monitoring program, and then you know your provider is going to get that self-tracking data. So, you know, I'm going to try to be adherent. I'm going to do my best. I don't want to disappoint my doctor. Nobody wants to disappoint their primary care doctor, right? And so that, that sort of piece of the accountability is important for providers and for patients to really execute shared decision-making at an even greater level.
So you've touched on the automatic transfer of data to those providers and remote patient monitoring. So there is a pretty big technology component here. Can you tell me a little bit more about how technology plays a role specifically in PreventScripts, but just in general in the healthcare space, how you see the role of technology evolving?
We took a series of validated survey instruments and we turned that into a pre-visit assessment. So every patient, 13 to, you know, as soon as you have a smartphone, 13, 12, to 74 through the younger elder, every patient before they come to their visit needs to have a ADA risk assessment, patient-reported outcomes, self-efficacy, patient self-efficacy. That's their agency. Do they even think they're in charge of their health at all? Do they even think they're capable? Self-efficacy, we do a patient-reported outcomes global 10 survey, and then we roll that up with a stage of change, Prochaska di Clemente stage of change survey. So is this patient, are they in the stage of action? I am coming in to see my doctor. I am ready to do something about my health today. You know, I know my weight is not ideal. I know I've got some risk. I know my grandfather died suddenly of a heart attack, or my grandmother's got type 2 diabetes. Or is this a pre-contemplative patient? That pre-contemplative patient, they may have risk, but they aren't ready to undergo an intervention. So there's a disconnect. When you go to the doctor, as primary care doctors, we want to say, okay, do all these things, you know, eat better, lose weight, you know, do this, eat more fruits, drink your water. I call it kitchen sinking. We kitchen sink them because we don't have time. We're throwing everything on the patient at once in that moment, because we have such little time in that well check. And we know for a healthy patient, we're not going to see them for a year, or often an at-risk patient. And so that's what we call the blind spot of healthcare, where it's during this time that you might kitchen sink the patient, but then, you know, I can't really see you again till your insurance lets me see you again, and it'll be a year. And so this is a period of time that patients progress from pre-disease into full-blown disease. So we're trying to really get inside the patient's mind, as well as an SDOH survey, which is part of our assessment, and then our algorithm crunches up that data and makes a recommendation to the provider, sort of cutting to the chase. Where is this patient? You can't take a pre-contemplative patient and say, hey, let's do this remote monitoring program. It's going to, you know, because they're not ready. So we're customizing the intervention to the patient's stage of change, and then automating all of that assessment, providing efficiency. You know, normally an MA in a clinic would have to gather all these surveys, right? You know, algorithm, and our algorithm makes the recommendation. Not only that, patients may not give the proper answers with questions being asked in a hallway. So we're getting efficiency. The patients are happy to fill the survey out. The providers get the data. Efficiency is gained on the provider side. Knowledge is gained on the provider side. It's a reimbursable behavioral profile. And so that's the assessment piece. And then for the interventions, you know, we utilize all of the professional organizations I mentioned earlier, their recommendations. And, you know, it's really simplified. There's four numbers that create about 80% of your health, right? Your weight, your blood pressure, your blood sugar, your waist circumference is another one. And there's four behaviors that dictate that 80% of your health. There's really eight, but four on sort of our core home screen that patients are tracking. And so if you improve those four behaviors, you improve your four numbers, and that is responsible for 80% of our healthcare costs. So sort of wrapping this up in a gamified fashion, trying to foster self-efficacy remotely. You can do this. You got this, you know, such that over time we want to take these patients that don't have agency and help them develop agency over their life. And so we have lots of things. We have some goal setting surveys that patients fill out. Let patients set their own goals and track their own goals and track their progress within mastering that goal. Eat less sugar is my favorite goal of ours, because it seems like anytime anyone picks eat less sugar, that's when their weight starts dropping like a stone. And so we have seven behaviors that patients are picking. And behavior change is tricky. I mentioned the kitchen sinking that we doctors do. That's not how behavior change works. Patients pick one goal. They focus on one goal. And then we have sort of bite-sized educational tips around the one goal daily at a time that's convenient for the patient. So we're trying to guide them through this complete and permanent behavior change program, which takes them a year to get through. It takes 4 weeks at the minimum, 6 weeks, sometimes 2 months to create a new habit. So behavior change is hard. It's very difficult. And doctors were never taught in medical school how to change patient behavior. We were taught a whole lot of stuff about a whole lot of diseases and how to diagnose them. So this is not something that primary care providers really are focusing on. And so we're trying to take the science of behavior change, roll it all up into this digital product, a mobile product that's easy. It's on your phone. Takes 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the afternoon. This is easy to use stuff. And then loop that data back to the provider securely into their electronic medical record. We have logins for providers also, if they want to track it that way. And to securely get that right information to the provider at the right time, at a time they can do something about it, and in a way that's reimbursable and financially sustainable for the clinic.
So to me, what you've described sounds like a no-brainer. You're leveraging psychology and right, how to change patient behaviors. You're increasing the patient agency over their own health. You're leveraging technology to make it easily integrate into the physician's existing workflow. So what are the barriers to implementing something like this? Because this, to me, this just seems like, why wouldn't you implement this?
We have thought of mostly everything. You know, providers, the barrier on the provider side is time. They are doing so much work around prior auths. I mean, it's busy work. There's so much busy work that's baked into the provider, primary care provider existence that, you know, the barrier is time. And so we've worked really hard to, you know, automate the data collection, put the report right into the patient's chart where you walk into the room, it's right there. Of course, the providers do have to look at the report. You know, you can't bill anything without looking at the report. So, you know, that takes a minute. The barrier, and certain patients are ready to do this. They want, you know, they want to have questions answered about, you know, is my insurance going to cover this? Am I going to have a copay? And those kinds of things. And so we've just worked a lot on the education piece that you may have a copay, but in most instances, it's, you know, it's $5 or it's $9 that the patients are paying for this. But I would say there's no shortage of patients that are eligible. Where we live, 80% of patients are eligible for this intervention because we also have an intervention for tobacco users. So, you know, where we live, there's not a lot, it's only 20% of people that are, quote, low risk. So, you know, the clinics need help in onboarding. And so we offload that with sort of, you know, signs that are explaining the program in the clinic and QR codes, you know, a QR code that's on a banner that allows the patient that's eligible to just QR code, download the app. They fill out the onboarding screens. We send the kit to the patient's house. We have sort of a white glove support team that helps the patients with getting that scale connected so that the providers, it's not on the provider's plate. And I'd say, we've done everything we can do to, you know, we've surveyed 10,000 patients across Kentucky and Tennessee to assess risk. And we're seeing clinically significant reductions in all of the important key metrics. So it's just really finding out about us and what we're doing. I'd put our product up against any digital health company today. And it's because we are working at that earliest inflection point. You know, when you're working with a 76-year-old heart failure patient, trying to keep them at bay and improve their disease just as much so they don't have to go back to the hospital and preventing readmissions, okay, your cost reductions are 50% at best. Because we're working earlier in the disease space, our average age of enrolled patient is 53. We can oftentimes reverse disease. You know, you don't, you know, it's a little 10 millimeter of mercury blood pressure reduction, you know, 5 or 8% weight loss is all it takes to take a at-risk patient and normalize them.
I like that you're using the term cost reduction because one of the concerns around preventive care is demand destruction, that if we make our patients so healthy that they don't need us anymore, then healthcare doesn't have a business. But to your point, you might make more money from an inpatient visit, but the cost for that inpatient visit is so high that when all is said and done, your net revenue is probably more when you're doing this preventive care.
Right, right. And it, you know, it took a while for the these pieces to come into play. But primary care providers are the obvious first stop. They're already the highest value providers, right? So adding value and adding prevention to an already high provider group is the obvious place to start for us. We enroll the one patient, and the beautiful thing about family medicine is that clinic is taking care of that whole family. So we're pulling along this whole family. And then sometimes, oftentimes, enrolling the spouse and enrolling other family members and enrolling the aunt and sort of bringing this whole family along this journey, which is very slow and takes time, and it takes no less than a year.
And you're not just impacting the single patient that's signed up, because I have young children and I decide what they eat. So I am programming them for the rest of their lives. What is their relationship with food? So you're also helping the next generation as well.
Right, right. As a pediatrician, I, we see this, you know, teenagers come in and they don't have any control over this, what's going on. But then you can have a teenager who's 17 years old, one of my first little case study patients, who lost an extraordinary amount of weight and resolved his sleep apnea, was going to the store with his parents and saying, "Mom, let's get these grapes, Mom, let's get these apples." So it works both ways, but we're definitely excited to change the culture within families, in a geographic where we have the worst life expectancy and everything is pitted against you. But the thing of it is, patients can do this work. They can do it. They can goal set. They can track. They can change the culture in their workspace and make a choice to do something different at work and bring healthy snacks. You know, so sort of this thinking that my patients won't do this is just wrong. Mm-hmm. They just need the proper tools that fits into their life.
Are there any last words of wisdom or encouragement or advice for the listeners?
What are your quality improvement objectives for 2024? What are you going to do? What are you going to do this year? And then you have to look at how are you going to meet those goals? What's on the efficiency side of that goal? You know, if you're looking to reduce blood pressures, how are you going to gather that data? How are you going to do it from an efficiency standpoint? And then what are the levers in your organization that are going to be necessary to create that sustained change? You can't do everything all at once. You have to prioritize. And then who are the partners that you need?
So thank you so much for sharing your insight around chronic disease prevention. This concludes today's Lean Health Tech podcast. If you're a listener and would like to hear a certain topic covered in future episodes, please let me know by leaving a review or comment. Thanks for joining, and be sure to check out the next episode.